Huh, 22 minutes to home. I just got a little notification on my phone telling me how long my commute from the broadcast center will be today. Now, it can do that because my phone actually knows a lot about me. Because it's location aware, it knows where I go to every weekday, and that's probably my work. It knows it's at my home every night, and so it can tell me how long my commute will be. It's a cool thing that just seems, you know, normal for my phone to be able to do now. I don't even think about the how. And most of the time, we don't think of how much of our data our tech gathers. But this past summer, Edward Snowden leaked information about the NSA accessing data stored by tech companies we use every day. You don't have to be doing anything wrong to be disturbed by how much is potentially known about you and how leaky that data may be. Last month, the big tech companies issued an open letter to Barack Obama asking for tighter controls on surveillance. But what if, in the future, the answer lies in not giving up your data in the first place?
The idea behind IndiePhone is to create a phone with a beautiful user experience that's easy to use for mere mortals where you happen to own your own data. You know, that just happens to be open and where you're in control of your own information.
That's Aral Balkan. He's an experience designer based in the UK, and he's talking about his new startup, IndiePhone.
Unlike a Google Android phone, for example, where Google owns your data, essentially, and analyzes your every move, you know, every email you send with Google Mail, your location, because your phone is sending that information to Google for it to enable services like Google Now, everything that you're doing so that they can monetize their data, because that's their business model. So ours is the exact opposite of that.
So in part, Aral's responding to the closed proprietary silos of today's tech giants. But his emphasis on a cell phone that just happens to let you control your own data is also a response to the limitations of the free and open software movement.
We've had 30 years of the Free Software Foundation and 20 years of open source. And we don't have a shining example of an open product that's had mainstream consumer acceptance. And there's a reason for that, because what we have in the open world is mostly enthusiasts building tools for other enthusiasts, and that's great. And, you know, the internet runs on open source at the infrastructure level. But at the consumer level, there really isn't anything that can compete with the likes of, say, a Google Nexus phone or an iPhone.
But what about the Android platform, I asked? Isn't that an example of open source consumer success?
only in name. No, Google doesn't open its core essential elements of its products. It opens ancillary ones. So it talks the talk, but doesn't really walk the walk.
But I didn't contact Aral just to talk about his phone. I wanted to ask him about a bold prediction he made, that 2014 was going to see the rise of what he calls indie tech.
Well, indie technologies are technologies that empower the individual. They are decentralized, and they empower people to own their own information. Beyond that point, if you then decide to share your information, of course, go right ahead. You know, the idea behind indie technologies is not to disconnect you from the world, but it's to give you independent alternatives for sharing or not sharing. I think that's a very important thing in today's world.
Could you give me an example of an indie tech project?
Sure. There are so many happening right now. MailPile, for example, is a project that aims to give people control over their own email. There's a project called Camly Store for creating an alternative to Dropbox. OwnCloud is another one. So there are lots and lots of different projects.
So you and other technology observers have talked about how we're moving beyond thinking of technology in terms of features, and we're starting to think about it in terms of experience.
Yes.
So can you explain that?
There was a time when features were important, when, say, a doubling of the clock speed of a central processing unit made things that were previously impossible possible. And when that's happening, when something makes something impossible possible, it doesn't matter how difficult it is to use. Your only alternative is not to do that thing.
Right.
So you're going to learn it and you're going to do it. But today, at least in the consumer space, for most products, we have feature parity between various products. When that happens, features stop being important. And when that happens, a differentiating factor becomes the experience, the ease of use, and then moving beyond ease of use to, is it delightful? Is it a beautiful experience?
And so that's where your focus on user experience and making something lovely to use comes in.
Exactly. I mean, products like the iPhone have set the bar. Nothing that is a worse experience than that is going to get a long-term foothold in the consumer market. And, you know, Google didn't always get user experience, but today, I believe when they make their own products, so when they control hardware, software, and services like they do with their Nexus phone, they get it.
Of course, the advantage of services like Google or Facebook is that in exchange for using our data for advertising, we get this software that's easy to use, fun to use, and crucially, that we don't have to pay for. So can indie tech really compete with that? I mean, what would the business model look like?
To take your first question, you're not really getting it for free. There's a reason the service does not have a monetary cost attached. It's because you're not the customer. You're the product that they sell to their customers. Your data is very valuable. And in a way, it's not entirely forthright of them to say it's a free service because they are deriving huge value from your data. And to take the second part of your question in terms of business model, our business model is going to be a much more straightforward, much older business model, which is to sell you a phone that has a great user experience. And if you don't want to set up your own server because the server will be open source, the operating system will be open source, we will take care of it for you. But basically, we'll be doing that like a gardener takes care of your garden, as opposed to owning your data.
So why do you think 2014 is going to be the year that indie tech really takes off?
There was a conference in Portland earlier this year where we basically witnessed the Declaration of Independence of the web, where some of the brightest minds, hundreds of people got together along with a manifesto, a novel that was written for the occasion, a marching band. It was quite spectacular. Basically, a rile against the closed silos. And just looking at all of the various projects that are out there that are coming together, people are tackling various aspects of this very difficult, very convoluted problem, because the problem essentially is that we need to decentralize the web.
I know that this is an issue that's dear to the hearts of a lot of technologists, but do you think that regular consumers really care about that? I mean, have the Snowden leaks, for instance, had that much of an impact on the rest of us that we're willing to seek out products, you know, without the huge marketing budgets and so forth and sign up for them because they're not closed silos?
Well, I believe it has to a certain degree. I was reading a study on teens and teen behavior and how a large proportion, I forget the exact amount, but about 60%, I think, of those surveyed had made changes to their privacy settings on Facebook directly influenced by the Snowden leaks last year. But we can't rely on that. We can't make the fact that what we're doing is open and what we're doing empowers people to own their own data. We can't make that what is unique about this product. We can't make that the expectation that people will buy it. At the very least, it's very arrogant to say, here's a product, it's open, it protects you in a certain way, but it enfeebles you in terms of the experience. We have to actually make that user experience deeply empowering so that it's something that they own.
I mean, there was that Project Diaspora a while ago
Yes.
that was built on the idea of people running their own servers and owning their own data, and it was to be
exactly.
a social network. But it seemed that part of the problem was it was sort of too difficult to use.
Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, gosh, you know, I wonder if anyone's created a distributed social network that I can use. No one has that need. You know, people wake up and say, hey, I want to share my photos with my friends. I want to see what my friends are up to. And that's the problem with features-led projects, which is all of open source today, practically. We need to bring design thinking to open source.
At the Consumer Electronics Show this past week, we heard a lot about the boom in wearable tech, for instance, you know, devices that monitor us, like our fitness tools and apps. I
Yes.
wonder if you can imagine a time in the future when we'd have our own repositories of all that data that we're gathering, you know, on our apps, on our wearables, on our implantables, on our sensors, and actually have it for ourselves.
Well, that's the future that I want to see, and that's the future that we're trying to create. All of this comes down to a matter of ownership. Who owns this data? Who owns these services? And who owns these devices? Because fundamentally, that's going to affect the very nature of our society in terms of civil liberties going forward, whether we as individuals own them or whether certain faceless venture capital-backed multi-billion-dollar transnational corporations own it.
Thank you very much for talking to us. Fascinating discussion.
No, thank you for having me, Nora.
Aral Balkan is an experienced designer based in Brighton.